It's Sunday morning, time for the great outdoors with Charlie Potter. Brought to you by the all-new Chevy Silverado and ChevyDriveChicago.com on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome to the Great Outdoors Show. Charlie Potter, your host here on WGN Radio, and I hope you think I have a great show for you this morning. I'm going to return one last time for the year to Alaska. Last week, I talked a little bit about some of the experiences I had, and this week, I'm going to take you on a travel adventure, and whether you ever step out of your car, whether you fish or you hunt, it doesn't really make a difference. I have to say, I've had the great pleasure of being a lot of places in the fall when the leaves turn and the scenery is spectacular. I have never been to a place that equals Alaska. And so for the first few minutes of this show, and obviously Alaska's twice the size or three times the size of Texas, it's rather enormous. But when I talk about Alaska, I'm talking about flying into Anchorage and doing so in the fall when the falls are in their absolute splendor. And so if you were looking at a calendar and you wanted to time it, I would aim about the 15th or so of September. You can go a little earlier if you go north of Anchorage up towards Delta and Fairbanks. You might even go all the way to Denali. If you have spectacular weather, well, it's even that more incredible. But if you don't, if the mist is rolling through and the mountains are shrouded in clouds, when it does clear off a little bit, you'll see fresh snow and you'll see the tundra in incredible colors. So landed in Anchorage, had a series of meetings. Of course, they all have to do with the great outdoors. And in this case, about an IMAX movie that's being made about Alaska and the Pacific Rim. And the setting is unbelievable. And so I had the opportunity to see some of the people that have been involved and talk about how the film's being made and what hopefully can do to help save what's left of the wild of Alaska. And anyway, in my case, first thing I did one afternoon was head up to Flat Top Mountain for a hike. Well, I can assure you that hiking on Flat Top Mountain is something that's not easily done, particularly when the wind is blowing 60 miles an hour plus as it was. We lumbered our way up this steep incline with the incredible color of the tundra. It was cloudy. It was spitting rain. And yet even with that, with the clouds moving in and out of the valleys and the mountains, the fall colors were just spectacular. We couldn't make it all the way to the top of Flat Top Mountain because we would have been literally blown off. But around Anchorage, there are fabulous, absolutely fabulous hiking trails. Bears, in some cases, are a concern. Moose are a definite concern. You don't go off on your own. But even along Cook Inlet, Anchorage has built a trail system that is just beautiful to walk along the shore of Cook Inlet and get, in the case of when I was there, begin to see the fall colors that are just spectacular. So there's great hiking around Anchorage. There's not a lot of fishing, believe it or not, right around Anchorage. You've got to go an hour to an hour and a half in a number of directions. As someone said to me when I was having lunch one day, you come to Anchorage and you get in a plane and you fly 5 minutes and then you start to see Alaska. So Anchorage is a, for those of you who've been there, you know what I'm saying. Anchorage is a bit of a disconnected city. There are about 300,000 people or so who live in Anchorage, but it sprawls. There's really no downtown. Unfortunately, Anchorage has a very high homeless rate, which is really sad to see. But the scenery, when you get out of Anchorage, you walk along Cook Inlet, is the beginning of your exposure to Alaska. And if you go south out of Anchorage, as we did, and you start headed towards the Kenai Peninsula, you go by Alyeska, the ski resort, and then you carry on down towards Kenai and you turn west and head towards Seward, and the mountains are just exploding out of the ocean, and they are snow-capped, and the colors of the aspen and the birch and the maple. I've often said the fall is a quest to follow the silver maples. Well, you can do that in Alaska as well, except it's aspens. And their colors on the mountains and the red bushes and the berries, the whole system is just alive, and it's just exploding in colors. And to look up at these mountain tops, which are all now, some of them glaciers, so they have snow all year, but then a lot of them just had fresh snow. And then to cross the rivers, in the case of the Kenai, cross it right away, and the Kenai is the iconic river in Alaska, and I'll talk about it in the second part of the show about what's happened to the king salmon run on the Kenai, and also a bit about silver salmon. But you carry on down the peninsula, and you cross a number of rivers. You go by this incredible community called Clam Hill, or Clam Bluffs, rather. And at Clam Bluffs, there's an outfitter by the name of the Steelhead Company, which I'll talk about in a moment. And then you carry on down the peninsula, and the scenery only gets better all the way to Homer. And as you're moving towards Homer, which is at the end of the spit, it's a little bit, while it's thousands of miles away, it's a little bit like going to Key West, except in this case, you've got mountains and sea. In Key West, you've just got flat and the ocean. So you get to Homer, and you've got to go over a series of bridges that were built to access Homer. Homer's a deep water port, and across from Homer are the glacier fields. And years ago, I sea kayaked at McCarty Glacier, flew out by plane and sea kayaked there. And this time in Homer, the weather was near summer-like, not a cloud in the sky. And to say you could see, which you could, to the horizon and beyond, it's really true. And there were kayakers, there were fishermen. The glacial fields were right in front of us, fresh snow on the mountains, fall colors. I just honestly can't say enough what a spectacular experience it is to fly to Anchorage, rent a car, and just drive and see the rivers and see the whole scenery, and it'll just take your breath away. And we talk about the incredible fall colors in Wisconsin and Minnesota and Michigan, and they are spectacular. Throw in on top of that mountains, snow-capped. The American West, as great as it is in the fall, Alaska has it beaten. It really is something, and we were lucky to see it in some of the finest of weather you'll ever have in Alaska. So when I come back from the break, I'm going to talk a little bit about what's going on in the fish world of Alaska, which should be alarming to everyone, whether you eat salmon, want to catch salmon, or just want to know there's salmon. But I guess that little travelogue of Alaska, it put it on your bucket list in September. Go to Anchorage, rent a car, and experience a scene where one of the individuals said to me as we were driving along, you know, you just feel so small, and you do. Everything is so big. I'll be back in just a moment with much more on the great outdoors. Hope you're enjoying the show. This is Charlie Potter on the Outdoor Voice of Chicago and America, 720 WGN. And first, a message from our longtime sponsors in Northwest Indiana and Chicagoland, Chevrolet dealers.
Hiking, camping, and hunting, it's all an adventure in the great outdoors, but nature can be tough. You need to be ready for anything and everything. Chevy Silverado is built to handle the toughest conditions and get you everywhere you want to go, worry-free. Silverado's designed to handle the big jobs. It's built for the great outdoors. With over 13,000 pounds of towing capacity and trailering sway control, Silverado can haul the biggest loads on the roughest roads and keep you cool as a Sunday drive. With 8 available cameras and up to 14 different views, it can spot trouble before it gets to you. That's peace of mind. And when you're ready for the backcountry, Chevy Silverado 1500 ZR2 owns the off-road. You name it, we run over it. No wonder it's Motor Trend's 2023 four-wheeler pickup truck of the year. So see your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealer or go to ChevyDriveChicago.com and check out a Chevy Silverado. It's freedom to explore the great outdoors.
It's Charlie Potter and the Great Outdoors on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the Great Outdoors Show. Charlie Potter, your host here, as I'm doing a little bit of a travelogue on Alaska. I'm going to move from traveling in the Kenai Peninsula to actually fishing in the Kenai Peninsula and describing what it's like to get in a helicopter and be flown into the glaciers and step out and try to catch steelhead, which I consider to be the greatest freshwater fighting fish there is. And also there's a tale here about salmon. So the Kaseelof River, or Kaseelof as it's more appropriately pronounced, is the prime steelhead river in the Kenai Peninsula. And there's an outfitter there by the name of the Steelhead Company. And they specialize in taking you to remote places to catch steelhead. Now, when you fish for steelhead with a fly rod, you're hoping to maybe get one or two rises a day. And if you land one, you're fishing barbless hooks. If you land one, it's even more unbelievable. So imagine getting in a small helicopter on a crystal clear day with Cook Inlet in front of you, 10,000-foot peaks surrounding you, flying out in a helicopter to land on a little creek that's fed by glacier water and where the steelhead, and these are not long rivers like the Dean and rivers like Skeena and stuff that are in British Columbia. These are much shorter rivers, much smaller rivers, have much smaller runs of steelhead, but they have enough steelhead to make life interesting. And to be in a setting where the bear tracks are fresh on the ground as they were, where you can see moose, and from the air in a helicopter, you spot the antlers of a bull moose just racking the trees. We actually hovered over a bull moose that was completely oblivious to us, just thrashing with his antlers, knocking down these alders in anticipation of the upcoming fight, which you'll have with another bull moose. And to do so on a day or days when the weather was just the best it can possibly be. So you step out into these rivers and you hope that steelhead are coming in from the ocean. They may come two or three at a time. They may come 20 at a time. There aren't great thousand fish runs. They're smaller runs, and they come into the rivers in the fall, and they stay there and they spawn, and then they go back out in the spring out to sea. Steelhead, unlike salmon, don't come in and die. They're going back out to sea, and generally they're coming in after their second year at sea, and these steelhead can be anywhere from 10 to 15 pounds would be a big one. Well, you put a 10-pound steelhead fresh from the ocean, bright silver, on an 8-weight fly rod, and hang on. And that's really what I can say, is hang on. It's an experience where the strike is aggressive. It practically takes the rod out of your hands. And then the fish is airborne in just moments, and its fight is almost always downstream, saying, you know, can you keep up with me? And they're acrobatic in the air. There is no fish that fights harder, in my view, than an ocean-run steelhead in fresh water on a fly rod. So put that setting up in your mind. And if you're lucky, as I said, you might get one or two strikes a day. If you get more than that, you've had a good day. If you land a fish, you've had a great day. This is not about numbers. This is about steelhead live in extraordinary places where the scenery is spectacular and the environment is rough. So I'm standing knee deep in a river. Believe it or not, we have had 7 steelhead on. We have landed 3. There are 2 of us, my son and me. We're having a steelhead day for the ages. And I'm standing in the river up to my knees, and the river's about 30, 40 yards across, and I've cast the fly out, and it's drifting downstream, and I feel this tremendous strike. And I take my rod, and I turn it towards the bank, the downstream bank. You never, as I was reminded as I lost a steelhead moments before, you never want to set your fly upstream. You're pulling it away from them. You always want to turn your fly line downstream and set towards the bank. And I did. I gave a great strong set. And the next thing I knew, I'm upside down in the river. And let me tell you, cold is not the way to describe falling in a glacially fed stream in the middle of September when the temperature is about 50 degrees. When I set, I pulled back and my feet, you're not allowed to use felt soled boots in the rivers in Alaska because of the worry about spreading diseases from stream to stream. When I set, my feet came out from underneath me and I went straight backwards. Yes, the water was about 18 to 24 inches deep, so I didn't fall right on the rocks. When I went backwards, I went completely under, head, everything, my entire body. But by goodness, I held that rod in my left hand and I held it tight. And I came up. Of course, I'm in shock a little bit. And all I can think of is, don't lose this fish. And I'm bouncing along the bottom. I can't get my feet underneath me. I'm not in danger of going over a waterfall or going down into a deep pool where I could drown. And the water is about 40 degrees. But I'm quickly aware of how cold it is, and I'm lying on my back. I can't get my feet underneath me. I'm holding the rod in the air, trying to keep it taut so the fish can't get off. And with that, I scream to my son, and with that, I get hoisted by the back of my shoulders up out of the river, literally just a complete stand straight up. And, of course, my waders are, even though I have a wader belt on, my waders are filled to the brim. And I have the fish on. I have not let go of the fish in the, I would say, 20 to 25 seconds. I was in the water bouncing along. I did everything I could not to turn over. I wanted to stay on my back so I could hold the rod tight. I got on my feet, and I was so proud I had this fish. And I kept pulling on the line. And all of a sudden, I realized the line wasn't pulling back. I pulled a little bit again, and the line didn't pull back. I had snagged a tree stump in the bottom of the river. And yes, it sure pulled hard when I struck. When my fly hit that and my fly didn't move and I hit set hard and I fell in the river, I knew I had a big steelhead on, and I was convinced for 30 or more seconds I had a big steelhead on, until there I am standing there, completely soaked from head to toe, waders full, holding a tight line with an 8-weight rod, pulling as hard as I can. And I'm pulling on an immovable stump in the bottom of the river. So standing there in the river freezing, I couldn't wait for a warm shower and the helicopter to come quickly enough. When I got back to the lodge, the conversation went, in the little time I have left, the conversation went to, where are the silver salmon? They're not there. It's been the poorest silver salmon run anyone can ever recall across the Kenai, across Bristol Bay, Prince William Sound. Something is going on. The silvers have not shown up this year, and it's a source of great concern. And as for the king salmon, the Chinooks, the king of them all, only about 6,000 kings came up the river into the Kenai Peninsula, into the Kenai River this fall. The lowest run on recorded history, one half of what was last year, and down about 90% from what was there a couple decades ago. Something very wrong is going on with these magical fish in the Pacific. Thanks so much for listening. This is Charlie Potter on the Outdoor Voice of Chicago and America, 720 WGN.